Welcome to Hockey Night in New York, where Islanders hockey always reigns supreme. Whether you were raised at the barn in Uniondale or born in the stable at Belmont, Hockey Night in New York is your home for all things Isles. Now, let's drop the puck and get this party started.
Ladies and gentlemen, it is Hockey Night in New York. Welcome to the program, everyone. It is Tuesday, March 26th, 2024, coming to you live from Floored Media in Rockville Center. Have an absolutely wonderful show coming up for you tonight. Andrew Gross of Newsday will be joining us, and Mr. Stefan Rosner is back in the studio here at Floored Media. How you been, bud?
Dude, I am great. I cannot wait to go down to Florida. I am so pale. Need the sun.
You gonna hit the beach, pal?
Yeah, maybe. Yeah, we'll see what happens. The hot tub.
I hope you do.
Appreciate it.
I hope you do. Well, before we dive into the show, I want to remind you all that we are proud to be sponsored by Blue Line Deli and Bagels. Satisfy your hunger at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington and 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip. Check out the menu at BlueLineDeli.com. Also proud to be sponsored by Main Street Board Game Cafe. Find your crowd and unplug your game at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. And also happy to be sponsored by Razor and Kniff Attorneys at Law, ready to fight for you. Check them out at RazorandKniff.com. That's RaiserandKniff.com for a free consultation. And if you're going to hop into the questions later and questions brewing, just remember to say questions brewing. Ask your question, and hopefully we will get to it when we get to the questions brewing segment. And with that out of the way, folks, Andrew Gross is joining us right at the top of the show. So we're going to start with a break. We'll be right back.
If you're an Islander fan, there's nothing like a big win, a tasty meal, and great company. And Blue Line Deli and Bagels provides all that and more. Owned and operated by diehard Islander fans, Blue Line Deli and Bagels happily serves Bagel Boss bagels and a full menu of delicious food and beverages. Whether it's breakfast favorites like pancakes and omelets, specialty heroes and wraps like the Hat Trick and the Hip Check, or fresh-made coffee and smoothies, Blue Line Deli and Bagels has you covered. So stop on in to the flagship location at 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington or the new spot at 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip for their familiar friendly service and the best food around. And don't forget, you can always check out the menu and order online at BlueLineDeli.com or pick up the phone and call 631-944-3222. Blue Line Deli and Bagels. Our goal is to make you a hero.
Thanks for giving some time to our sponsors. Ready to talk more Isles? The train rolls on right here on Hockey Night in New York.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. It is time for On the Line, and joining us on the line is friend of the show, Mr. Andrew Gross of Newsday. Andrew, how you been, man?
Hey, buddy. How you doing, Sean? Good to hear your voice.
Yes, yes. Great to have you back. Let's talk some New York Islanders hockey. Let's talk being bamboozled and hoodwinked by the New York Islanders. Six-game winning streak turns into a six-game losing streak, then another ray of hope when they beat the Winnipeg Jets, and then, of course, they lay that egg against the New Jersey Devils. What the hell is going on with this team, and why can't anybody figure them out?
Well, I mean, that's the micro, right? If you look
sure
at the if you look at the macro, this is just a total extension of what we've seen all season, where there's no traction, there's no consistency. They can be a completely different team depending on what day of the week it is. And I'm really starting to feel, you know, that it's just because they're a team that's 5 years possibly, you know, past when they were a really good team, you know? I think the age and the games wear you down, and for whatever reason they got settled in. They all have long-term contracts. They're all a little bit comfortable, and for whatever reason that little spark or that little fire that every really good team has just flickered all season. And when it's on, they can be really, really good. Although you maybe take a couple of points off the Jets win because they laid an egg in their next game too. They just they're on a stinker as well. So, but you know, the Islanders were really good in that game. They were really good at spots during their six-game winning streak. And you know, it's going to take a deep dive by management after this season to answer the question that you just asked me and try and figure this out going forward, because look, as we know, a lot of the characters are going to be back next year. Right. You got long-term deals for a lot. You know, and it's not just, you know, everyone talks about Scott Mayfield and Pierre Engvall, but it's Adam Pellick, it's Ryan Pulak, you know, Bo Horvat, Matthew Barzal, Ilya Sorokin. There are a lot of long-term deals on this team. This is the team, and management has got to really, and I shouldn't even say management, I should say ownership, has really got to figure out what direction and how to fix this at this point.
Yeah, and Andrew, thanks so much for joining us. With Patrick Roy coming aboard... With Patrick Roy coming aboard, you mentioned the spark, and for a week or two, we saw that spark. We saw the six-game winning streak, but overall, again, the record hasn't been better. It's been a 500. But overall, what have you seen from the Islanders under Roy?
They look more connected, and I know that's kind of a buzzword that Patrick's been using, but there are games where they really do look like they're playing more connected five-man unit. There are some games, unfortunately, where they don't look inspired. And I don't think, look, Lane Lambert was never going to win the Jack Adams, right?
Yeah.
But I think what this is showing you is it's more the players than the coach. And I think Patrick Roy is a good coach. I just don't know that, you know, the stuff that he wants to do, which is be more aggressive, which is to play faster, all the things that good coaches want their teams to do, to have a better mindset, to get their bodies to the net more frequently. I just don't know that there are some nights that the Islanders are physically and, you know, mentally sharp enough to do the kind of things that Patrick Roy wants. And that's a real issue.
Yeah, no doubt, Andrew. And you went through a list of names here of some of these players that have been with the team for a long time. And one that stood out to me and one that I wanted to bring up was Adam Pellick. He's a guy who's obviously been battling through a lot of injuries, and he's healthy this year as far as we know. But it looks like he's been having a rough go of it. He just doesn't look like the Adam Pellick that everybody came to know and love here on the island, being that stalwart, stay-at-home defenseman, helping to keep shots away from the net, keeping pucks out of the net. What have you been seeing out of him? And I know we just got the news that Scott Mayfield is going to be shut down. He had the injury basically since game one. Is there any inkling that maybe a guy like him might have something lingering going on, or this might just be an off year? What are you seeing out of Pellick?
Oh, I mean, there's no doubt that Adam he's not injured, that's for sure. I mean, but, you know, everyone's playing with bumps and bruises.
Yeah.
I just feel like it's the mileage at this point. You know, I mean, Adam and Ryan are both, I don't have it right in front of me, but they're right at the top of the hill, right? They're right about 30. And, you know, you climb that hill up to 30, and then you roll down afterwards. And they're right at the top of the hill. And it's not surprising to me that they're not as crisp or they're not as sharp as they maybe looked, you know, two, three seasons ago when they were 26, 27. The way they play and the way this league is, it takes it out of you. And you know, it's no fault of their own. It's the fault of building the team that, you know, maybe they didn't recognize that the mileage was going to wear a little bit quicker than, you know, maybe they expected.
Yeah, and, you know, you mentioned that, and because you can look around the league, right, and there's a lot of teams that have had cores that grow into their 30s and past their 30s, and some of them still are fairly productive, right? Now, obviously, it's different for everybody on an individual basis, but I think this was a little unexpected, and I just wonder if it's more the age or if it's more the age of this team collectively being together. Is this more of a case of just a group of guys who have kind of run their course together, in the sense that, you know, maybe they just need some fresh bodies in there, fresh personalities in there, just to give this team a kick in the pants? Because as you mentioned at the top of your segment here, was how, you know, these guys have the long-term contracts, you know, some of them have no movement clause, no trade clauses, and maybe they're getting a little comfortable. And maybe it's just a team that needs a shakeup, because, like you said, they're not finding that spark that they once had. I mean, they used to be a very disciplined team that showed up to work every night, and even if they were losing games, you were usually fairly happy with their effort. Whereas these days, you got everybody throwing their hands up in the air saying, you know, how the hell did they perform so well against Winnipeg or against the teams that they beat in that six-game winning streak? And then you have this game against the Devils and just say to yourself, you know, why can't this team just keep it together on a consistent basis?
Well, yeah, no, I mean, we saying you're using the word, I'm using the word, there's a comfort level. Mm-hmm. And I've come to that opinion that, yeah, they need some fresh blood. This mm-hmm. group has been together a long, long time, and there was some value for a long time
sure.
in keeping the group together and having players that trusted each other and that were so tight. You know, look, I've been in rooms that were not nearly as tight as this, and it does reflect on the ice. But look, everything runs its course. Coaches run their course. At a certain point, you know, a coach's voice is not heard. And, you know, that was some of the explanation, I guess, given to us for Barry Trotz not being here anymore. And, you know, that move looks crazier and crazier each day. Right? But that, you know, the explanation was we need a new voice. Well, I agree with you. I think sometimes the players need to hear new voices in the room. New blood is good for a team. You know, like when Jean-Gabriel Pageau came to this team, right? Or Bo Horvat last season. You know, that was a fresh face who was looking at it a little bit differently. But there's just not enough of it. The final assessment is I think this group went as far as it could, and now it's time to reshape the group. We've come to that point.
Last one for me, Andrew, here is how concerned are you with Ilya Sorokin, especially going forward, given the contract?
Well, you're the goalie, right? I mean,
yeah, but you know, you were a goalie in the streets, right?
Yeah. Look, no, did I say it to you? I turned to someone and I said, you know, they got this guy signed for 8 years, right? And look, Ilya Sorokin has been an all-world goalie on both an international and a professional level now. You know, probably since the time he was about 22, 23, we want to say. He's won championships in Russia. He's played internationally for his home country. He was runner-up in the Vezina last year. He doesn't look right this year. He looks like he's not always square to the puck. And you know what? The funny thing is, you know, you compare him next to Varlamov. And look, at this point in his career, Semyon Varlamov is not the goalie that Ilya Sorokin is. Mm-hmm. But Varley just has this knack for being square to the puck and letting the puck hit him. And what I'm seeing with Ilya, and again, I'm not Mitch Korn, I'm not Piero Greco, I'm not Stefan Rosner, I'm not a goalie coach. There's a little too much movement for me. He gets deep in his net, and he's not always 100% square to the puck. And that's something that, you know, I don't know that you can work on it bits and pieces, Piero and Mitch, during the season. But I think that, you know, I think that's an off-season overhaul where they got to really sit down with him with the video and really work on some positioning heading into next season. Am I worried? Look, you can't be. This guy's signed. He's going to be goalie for 8 years. You know, if he is not good, then nothing we say about this franchise makes any difference because they're not going to be good because you're beholden to this very large number one goalie salary. And if he doesn't play like a number one goalie, then nothing else is going to help you, right? But I don't think that's the case whatsoever. I think he's just having a rough season behind a rough team and he needs a little space. Maybe he's gotten a little worn down. Patrick has certainly used him over and over and over again. It's not been a rotation with Varley. It's been Ilya's net. Maybe he's a little, it's been a heavy schedule, as you know. So, you know, maybe it's all those factors, but I do think Ilya needs a reset over the off season. And I expect him to come back next season looking a lot more like his previous self than what we've seen in some games this season.
Andrew, I'm with you there 100%, and I know we got to let you go. You got to run, but we really appreciate your time. Thanks a lot for hanging out with us, and hope to do it again soon.
Hey, no problem. And hope you guys have a great show. Say hi to Donnie for me, and, you know, I'll catch you around the rink.
Will do, sir. Sounds good. Take
See
it easy. All right, folks, that was the great Andrew Gross of Newsday. Join us for a quick hit here at the top of the show. So, Stefan, I'm just going to continue off of what Andrew said there, just talking about Ilya Sorokin. I almost said Stefan Rosner. That, you know.
Flattered.
Right. But, you know, I think this is a guy who's kind of earned his keep. And, mm-hmm. and look, we're seeing that he's having a bit of a rough year, and I want to dive into it a little bit more. But you got to figure it's just an off year for him. This guy's going to bounce back. He's a professional. We've seen what he's done across the ocean. We've seen what he's done here.
Yeah.
And look, I think every goalie is as great as they may be. Every now and then deserves a little bit of a break, right? In the sense that, you know, they're not always going to be a world beater. They might have an off season. I mean, you look at the more extreme case like Sergei Bobrovsky, right? There was a time where we thought the guy just fell off the earth and he was never coming back. And now all of a sudden he's playing, you know, Vezina caliber again. So it can come and go, and hopefully it isn't as dramatic for Ilya Sorokin. But unfortunately, it hasn't been the best year for Ilya, and maybe you can give us a little more of an opinion. I know we've talked about it before, but you know, I was even just looking at stats on NYI Skinny from Eric Hornick, and I think he's had five of his last six starts. He's given up three goals in a period, I think the number is. He's 0-6 in his last six.
He's lost
six.
His last seven.
Last seven. Yeah. So you have a situation here where, you know, you can point to the team in front of him as much as you want, and granted, it's deserved. They're having their own struggles, but I think it's kind of fair to say, at least, you know, over these recent couple of weeks here, that Ilya just hasn't looked himself, and it looks like maybe the wares of the season are kind of getting to him a little bit.
And I think you look at last year, we talk about the defense, right? The defense last year wasn't any better than the defense was this year. The difference is that Sorokin was still in the show. That being said, another year in the league, teams are learning how to beat Sorokin, and it's all about adapting. Mm-hmm. And I think, you know, his first year in the NHL, he was trying to make the second save before making the first save, was allowing those sharp angle shots, got better at it last year.
Right.
But also last year is he had to think about making that second save because there was just numerous chances every night, and he was making those saves. Now this year, I think teams know they have to screen him. He's deep in his net. Deflections, backdoor plays, and I think we're Sorokin now, with how bad the defense has been in front of him, is trying to, again, make that second save again before making that first save, which is very bad. That's not going to get you results. And Andrew nailed it. It's about being squares. When you watch Varlamov play, Varlamov's not going to make the saves that Sorokin makes, those acrobatic saves. Mm. But what Varlamov does so well is he's very aggressive. He controls his rebounds. You look at the amount of shots Sorokin's faced this year, top of the NHL. Yes, a lot of it's from just poor coverage. But also, how many chances are coming off rebounds? How three or four extra shots per save? Where if it's Varlamov, he's either squeezing it or it's going to a corner. I mean, a lot of the issues with Sorokin, the amount of shots he's allowing or that he's facing, is on him not controlling the first shot.
Right.
When you leave it in front of you and you allow three or four shots, you have to make those sprawling saves. That's obviously going to impact the amount of saves you have to make. It makes your life harder, makes your defensive life harder, your defense's life harder. So yeah, I think for Sorokin, it's like he said, this season, offseason, you got to really go to the video room and focus on him just being aggressive and square. If he does that and tracks, he'll have an easier time tracking the puck the farther out he is. He's attacking shooters. You see a lot of times, too, where he's looking behind him or he falls backwards.
Yeah, yeah. Mm-hmm.
To me, again, I don't want to speak for him. I'm not a goalie coach, but I was always taught that if you feel like you're falling backwards or you're always looking behind you, that's a complete confidence thing.
Oh, sure.
The falling back part means you're not attacking the shooter. You're letting the shot come to you. When you see a goalie feeling it, they're very aggressive. They're attacking the puck carrier, attacking the shooter.
Sure.
And also, if you're doing that, the rebounds are going to probably go that way, where if you're sitting back, it's going to bounce off you, and probably you can't control it at all. Mm. So I think it's definitely a confidence thing with Sorokin. Wah said that he wasn't 100% pleased with this play. We know Sorokin isn't.
Right.
We know Sorokin's doing everything he can. It's not like Sorokin's not giving it his all every night, but clearly the confidence, when you face a lot of shots, even Wah said this too, which is great, is that when you face 40 shots a game and you allow a soft goal, that's going to happen when you face that many shots a game.
Yeah,
you always
absolutely.
Have the ability to bounce back. Now he's facing 20 shots a game where that one miss, or you're allowing a goal on every five shots, mentally you can't make up for it. It's not like you have another 30 shots to deal with. That goal could be the reason you lose. So I think there's more pressure than ever on Sorokin because now every shot is so much more important. And right now he's just not coming up with the big saves. And Varlamov, whose stats aren't as, they're probably around what Sorokin's are this year, he's just more compact. And I think he does make life a little easier for the defense in front of him.
Yeah, and you might be onto something in the sense that because of the way the defense is played in front of him, that he's just overcompensating for what's happening out there. And he's getting himself out of position because maybe he's over-anticipating a shot or a play because maybe he doesn't have as much faith in his D as he did previously. I mean, we can throw as many theories as we want out there, but at the end of the day, he's just not stopping as many pucks as he was, or at least he's not stopping pucks that maybe in the past you would expect him to stop. And it's kind of just a whole... you know, domino effect with the way the team is playing, the defense, the PK. You know, his numbers are terrible on the PK too, just because they can't keep pucks out of the net there. They can't keep pucks away either.
It seems he's like a part of that.
Yeah, of course. Yeah. But it's obviously a breakdown overall. I mean, I'm certainly not going to say Ilya Sorokin's the reason why their penalty kill is bad. I mean, it's just a bad penalty
kill. Also, just stop taking as many penalties and you probably fix that.
Well, aren't they one of the least penalized teams in the league? They just take the penalties at very inopportune times, and it just seems to burn them. It's just a situation where they take a penalty and like, puck's probably going in the net.
End of the period. Start of a period, up a goal.
During their own power play.
Yeah, they've done that, I think, 20-something times this year.
Right.
Last thing I will say on Sorokin is that Waugh wants him and Varlamov playing the puck more. I don't know what the mindset is of a goalie that's not used to doing it to now doing it. We've seen a couple of times Sorokin play the puck and either miss it or turn it over. We've also seen a couple of times where he tries to cover the puck and doesn't. I don't know what's going on with that. Again, I think it's just reads and trying to do too much or not communicating with the D again. If anyone's looking at the season and blaming Sorokin, utterly ridiculous. That being said, though, you're looking at teams that are in the playoff spot now are fighting for it. And Sorokin's getting outplayed by goalies that he should not be getting outplayed. James Reimer. No offense to James Reimer. He's in the NHL. Not a top goalie in the NHL. Charlie Lindgren. The reason the
remember, Reimer gave up a really bad goal to Riley.
But that Reimer Riley also was on his belly the whole time. He just made, at a big moment, his belly or pad, or they shot it at his pad on the ground. But, for example, the Capitals are in a playoff spot right now because Charlie Lindgren became a stud for them and elevated his game. And if Sorokin does that for the Islanders, they're probably where the Capitals are right now.
And you bring up Patrick Waugh with regards to the goaltenders, and I don't want to forget about bringing this up now that you have. What's your opinion on the early goaltender polls? Where do you stand on that?
I think it shows the players you're committed to winning. Like, if you're down 3-0 in a game, because we spoke to Brock Nelson about it, he goes, listen, I'd rather a coach that at least we're trying to go. Like, again, we all have a goal here, the game's over, but at least we're not, like, he's doing something to help us get an advantage. I don't love it because, one, for me as a goalie, I feel like if you're doing that, you're giving up on me giving you a chance to save, like, make a couple more saves to save you in it.
Okay.
Not a lack of faith, but you obviously, in this moment, don't, like, if a breakdown happens, you rather the net be empty with a chance to score and then me bail you out and give you a chance to go the other way. So it also depends on the power play, how it's going in a game. I think it's all feel. Like, if the power play is running with the extra man in a game and you're 3 or 4 in the power play, sure, do it. If your power play is over 5, pulling the goalie for 6-on-5 with less ice doesn't really, to me, feel like, well, why would you score that?
The example I look at is the Detroit game. Obviously a huge game, a game they needed to win. So I understand why he did it, because there was that urgency.
Yeah.
But you saw how they were playing previous to that. And not for nothing, he has a big enough sample size now where the early goalie pulls haven't exactly worked out. No. Not only have they not been putting pucks in the net, but they end up in the empty net. The
like
Islanders have done a very poor job of just maintaining possession. But the funny thing is, in that game, it almost worked out. They had a really, I think it was Horvat, they had right on the doorstep, and you were almost like, how did that not go in? So it almost worked that time, and then you would have had the one-goal game. But it was so early where I think there was at least four minutes left in the game, and I think I'm more of the mindset that you had, like, hey, you know, these guys made it 5-3. Let's see if they can get one more.
Yeah.
And then pull Sorokin, right? And I just think, look, I'm not saying that the Isles would have come back and won any of those games where Waugh, you know, pulled the goalie with 6 minutes to go,
he's done eight
minutes to go, whatever it's been. But you look at the stats now, and it just seems like they're always giving up one or two empty netters now when this happens. Like, maybe you dial it back a little bit.
And again, with this next couple of weeks going on, there might be a chance where you see him pulled. You know, if the Islanders go to overtime, like we saw against Minnesota Wild and Nashville, it might come down to that. If the Islanders are playing a team that they have to catch last game or two of the year, where a loss doesn't do anything, but you need the two points, like, I wouldn't be shocked to see that. Again, the problem is when you have a team that struggles so much with puck possession, pulling the goalie doesn't make a lot of sense to me.
No, I'm with you. Well, I'm glad we covered that.
Yeah, cool.
All right. So, look, it's been a little while since we've done the show. We haven't done the show since before the Ranger game, so we can just kind of blaze through these recaps a little bit. You have the 5-2 loss against the Rangers, but there is a common thread in these losses, which is what I want to get to. But they had the 1-0 lead after the first. They gave up 3 goals in the second period. 4-1 loss to Carolina on Tuesday. Gave up 3 in the first period. Thursday against Detroit. Gave up 3 in the second period. You know, and Waugh also had a lot of positive things to say after that game. Some fans are a little upset about that. I don't know if you have any opinion.
He walked it back the next day, but continue.
Oh, did he? Go ahead.
He said after the game, he goes, listen, like, after watching the film, I know it was overly positive, but we could have done this better.
Okay.
We could have done that better.
All right.
Again, I think for him, it's, you know, at this point, I know what fans want to hear, but him destroying the team at this point of the year, it's not going to do anything for them, I don't think.
No, I got it. But I understood the fan side, and I understood why Wah went about it as well. Saturday versus Winnipeg, they woke up, dominated, won an afternoon game, which doesn't
Mazel
happen.
Mazel tov.
Yeah.
Happy Purim, by the way, to all the Jews out there.
There you go.
Yeah. I'm Jewish, too. I could say that.
So, and again, it was another instance of they were still close enough in the standings where it was like a reel you back in type of game, right? Where
except
they lose
the third period.
Sure, sure. Yeah. But they're up enough.
Yeah, it's true.
That's fine.
It happens.
That's fine because they did well enough in the first two
periods.
It just
carried over.
Yeah, yeah. But look, they end the losing streak. They beat a top team in the Western Conference. You say to yourself, okay, it's happening again, and then you go to Sunday, and just a listless performance against the Devils, and once again, they gave up three goals in the second period. So in every loss, all four losses this past week, they had a three-goal period against.
And then the one win, they had a three-goal period.
Yeah, this is also true, coincidental, but like that's just wild to me that every one of those losses, and I believe this habit extends outside of just this past week.
I have them for you.
Oh, look at that. But, I mean, just wild that it seems like when it rains, it pours with this team, where they give up one goal, they can't reset themselves, and they're just giving up another couple before the buzzer sounds on the intermission.
If I can read my own handwriting here, it's the rains, it pours part. So they've allowed two or more goals in under 6 minutes 20 times this year.
That's jaw-dropping.
14 of them under Patrick Roy. More stats. 0-6-3 on the second end of back-to-backs.
Right.
They're 1-7-1 in their last nine, right? I think if I counted correctly. In the second period, they have allowed 99 goals.
I wrote that too.
That is the most the most amount of goals allowed in the second period in the entire league.
So you bring that up. I don't know if I'm cutting you off.
Oh, and three shutouts in their last eight losses.
That's also not great. Yeah. So I think it's the most shutouts, I think nine since like 2011 or 2013 or something like that. But to go back to the second period, 99 goals against, most in the league. Now, look, there's a lot of these stats that you can look at through a season, you know, whether it's 5-on-5, whether it's PK, power play, and just odd coincidences, odd circumstances. Even the three goals per period thing, right?
Crazy.
Like, these things happen sometimes. There's no rhyme or reason. There's no in-depth analysis that's going to tell you this is why it's happening or this is why it went this way or that way, right? But 99 goals against, second period, is there anything to that? Like, is it the long change? Is it lazy to just say, oh, well, they're over a lot of guys over 30. They're tired. The longer change, it's tougher for them to get off the ice in time, and they're taking longer shifts. Or is it just no? They just happen to be giving up a lot of goals in the second period.
I think the longer change has a lot to do with it. I think it's more to the point.
That's all I can think of.
Well, I think it's not even just the longer change, but they get caught so much.
Mm.
Whether it's trying to go for a change or not, like we've seen times they've tried to get to the red line to get it deep. And it's the soft play into the zone. The other team comes back the other way on the fast break when they get the change. And these odd man rush, I think it's a mental thing for sure. But a lot of guys, I mean, you see a lot of lines get pinned in the second period from their own doing. It could be the first. It doesn't matter that it is the second. It just so happens that's when it's happening.
Right.
We asked Wah about it the other day, and he's like, I don't know.
I got nothing.
And it's really weird because every team has to deal with the long change in the second period. The other team's dealing with the exact
same
thing.
Same with the afternoon games. So everybody plays them. Somebody's got to win them.
So, by the way, 0-6-3 on second end of back-to-backs. Another one, just fun. I'm like
you said that already,
junior.
But that's
did
all right.
I?
Yeah, you did.
Jeez.
Okay.
All good.
It's all right.
But yeah, second periods, no rhyme or reason for it. The only thing you can think of is that they just keep getting caught and are not making the smart plays in that frame.
Mm-hmm.
They're not making the smart plays in any periods. They're not winning a lot of games. But
so they're just dumber in the second period.
I didn't say that. You said that.
It's a joke.
Yeah. Funny. Huh? Yeah. No. I wish there was a way to point to like what
right,
it was.
Right,
like,
right.
Like,
right.
Wah obviously said if he knew. Like, all the players say if we knew, we'd fix it.
Mm.
But it's a lot of these questions where we talked to Lou at last summer when he spoke, and I asked him a question. He goes, you know, let me know if you have the answer because I don't, or whatever it was. And it's, well, obviously, that's what I'm asking because I don't have the answers.
Right.
Yeah. It is bizarre. It is bizarre. And like you said, I think it's more easy to explain the three or four goals in quick span because of just not having a backbone, not being able to have the mental fortitude where, you know, you allow a goal. I mean, this team used to be a resilient team where if they allowed a goal or two,
they came back fighting,
Came back fighting, and now it's just you allow one, like especially a soft one, if it goes in early, the wins are out of the sails and you're done. It's like playing rec hockey where you have a fill-in goalie who you're like, oh, we're losing anyway. Like, it's over. Mm. And you have a Sorokin goal. Or yeah, Varlamov and goal. Right? There's no reason for these guys to turn a switch off. And I know fans are tired of hearing, well, the effort's got to be better. Like, effort just has to be better. These are professional athletes. It's, again, that part I think is something that, I'm not going to say annoys Wah, but Wah is like one of the greatest competitors that's ever played this sport.
Yeah.
I don't think he can understand a player not giving 110% every shift. I'm not saying the players aren't trying, but there's a huge difference between 100% and 110% when the season's on the line.
10%.
Math is really your
strong suit. Also 110%. You can't literally give 110%.
No, but there's, you could give it all you got.
You can only give 100.
You could give it all you got or close to all you got, and there's always that, go for that extra push or that extra back sure. check or that extra sure. board battle where you're completely gassed. And for some reason, with the season on the line, we're just not seeing that collectively, which to me is crazy.
No, I agree. And I think that goes to what Andrew and I were discussing while he was on. Is this a team that's kind of just run its course yeah. and they don't have that fire in their bellies anymore? Now, you can get a quote from J.G. Pageau that says something to the tune of, there's no quit in this locker room.
Yep.
Everybody's on board. I forget what his exact wording was, but he was essentially reassuring us that, you know, we're not quitting. We're in this, you know, all that good stuff.
And I think, though, I think for a lot of the guys, that's the correct answer. The problem is, if there's a couple of guys that don't have that mindset, it's just dragging the entire group down.
Yeah.
I'm not saying it's a mindset where they're going to a game going, I'm not going to care, but
yeah,
certain guys not giving 100% is going to kill you.
I don't think that anybody's showing up to that locker room or those games and saying to themselves, we'll see how this one goes.
I bet the over. Yeah.
Whatever the case, you know, I'm looking forward to a nap after the game or whatever it is, right? Like, I'm sure they go with the intent to win the drive, but maybe it's just something subconscious where it was something they had previously and that flame has just kind of died out a little bit. And maybe that's why, like Andrew also said this summer, like, they really have to just assess who those guys may or may not be. Right. And there's a lot of character guys in that locker room. We know a couple of them might be gone just because their contracts are expiring. Yeah. Right. But then you have the J.G. Pageaus, you have the Anders Lees, and you have the, and I'm talking about guys now with, you know, higher salary on the team, Kyle Palmieri, who's been great under Patrick Wah. But they're going to look at all these guys, the entire list of players, and say to themselves, okay, who's part of the solution and who's not? And it's tough for me, and I'm sure for you, to go down that list and decide who is, who isn't. But, and I'm glad it's not my job, but I think that's the point that we must be at, because we see the inconsistency in their performance. We see that on a night where they are going, where they do have that drive, they can beat anybody in this league. They've beaten the worst, and they've lost to the
killed
worst.
The Boston Bruins.
Beat the best, they've lost to the worst. Yeah. They've done it all this season, right? And a lot of hockey teams do that in the NHL. But we know what they're capable of, and you've been saying it all season long that this is the most talented team that they've had over the course of the last 3 to 5 years, whatever the case may be. And so, as we know, it's not always the talent, it's the system, it's the drive, it's a combination of everything. And I'm certainly not saying that, you know, looking back now, oh, maybe Lane didn't deserve to get fired. I think that was just something that had to happen because of the way the season was going anyway. But we are also seeing that things that were plaguing this team pre-Patrick Wah are still a problem post. And as you just pointed out, there's new problems that have cropped up after Patrick Wah. So I think it's a real testament to just what these players are, who these players are on the ice, and that maybe we finally just need to see a more significant shuffling of the deck.
And you talk about the shuffling, which is a great point there, is that if the Islanders go into the offseason and it's Lou, and we're assuming Wah is going to have a say in this roster, that makes the most sense. But if upgrades aren't made at all, and they do run this back outside of a couple of pieces, and there's not enough players to fit Wah's game plan and Wah's not changing his structure, there was no point in hiring Patrick Wah.
It's a fair point, yeah. And he's going to have input on this. Like, Lou's going to say, Patrick, who was helping?
Yeah,
who
no, 100%.
Who's not, you know, whatever plays he's drawing up or whatever systems he's drawing up, forecheck, whatever, he's going to be like, hey, and obviously this is verbatim, but he's going to be like, hey, who's helping here? Where do you need more help? What, you know, left wing three, right wing two?
Who do you trust?
Yeah, who do you trust? Where do you need help here? And obviously Lou will do what is within his power in order to help that. You have to look at the salaries. You have to look at the cap structure. You have to look at the trade clauses that he gave out to
Bridgeport.
Well, that's where I want to go next with this is, look, the team is still mathematically in it. You can make whatever argument you want or whether they are actually in it based on their play. But is it time to see some kids come up? Or, in my opinion, I don't think we see any kids until the team finally says to themselves, all right, we're done. Let's see what some of these kids can do in some carefree hockey. Or do you think that they need a jolt before they're out of it to say, hey, maybe Ishikov or whomever, Dufour, whomever it is can come in and maybe just be a little spark plug to get some points out of the standings.
My mindset is if you have the cap space right now, which they do for one call-up, they could probably manipulate it to have two call-ups.
Sure.
Bringing a guy just to a practice does a lot. One, forget if he's playing in a game. It allows WA to just see the kid. And you could tell in practice if a player can fit with the NHL squad. Yes, you got to see it in a game, but why not have a kid come up and just practice? Let him get the experience. Let WA see. Because WA will know right away, like, this kid's got talent or this kid has the speed and has the hands, but there's no way to play for me.
Sure.
Things like that. But I do agree that the Islanders are not doing that unless they are mathematically eliminated.
That's how I feel.
Yeah.
Like, they can wait until, whether they're mathematically out or the Islanders are just like, okay, we're 7 points out with X amount of games to go.
But
we're not getting back
to me, yet. Those are the same thing. It's Lou. Lou has to admit,
right.
Lou has to in his head go, we're out of it. And I don't think he's ever going to admit that with the roster move.
I certainly don't think they're there now.
No.
For sure. Like, they're going into Florida and they're going to try their best to get some points down there.
You and both in Florida, you're right
all
there.
Of a sudden.
Yeah.
Absolutely. Because the thing is, they're not as far out of it as it feels because of the way that they've just been performing this season.
Mm-hmm.
They haven't given us any reason to be confident that it can happen. We know that technically they could surprise us because they've gone on a recent 6-game winning streak.
This is what Wasik said today.
We've seen what teams that they can beat. So, like, I wouldn't be absolutely shocked if they do go on a run. Do I expect it? Absolutely not. They've given me no reason to. But it could happen. And, look, I just hope they keep giving me a reason to watch. I have to anyway because we do the show. But I hope they give me a reason to watch because they're still in it and they still have a shot to get in. I just don't blame anybody out there watching, listening, or whomever for saying they're toast because I get it. Because, you know, you go from the win against Winnipeg to just the way they came out against New Jersey, and you can't use the back-to-back excuse. This is a huge game. It's a team not only trying to get back in it, but you need those 2 points just to stay in the mix, and they just completely fell flat, and it's completely discouraging. So, you know, maybe they got it in them, maybe they don't, but I don't think they're going to bring kids into the mix until they feel themselves personally behind closed doors that, okay, this season's toast. Let's see what these guys can do.
Couldn't agree more. Do you want to talk about Scott Mayfield quickly?
Yeah, let's talk about Scott.
Scott Mayfield, done for the year. Before the deadline, I think it was a Tuesday, we were talking to Lou, and he said we're going to shut Mayfield down for 4 to 6 weeks, and then after that, we'll evaluate and see if surgery is what's going to happen. And turns out surgery is what is happening. He is done for the year. He got hurt in game one of the season. Blocked a Rasmus Dahlin shot off his left ankle. Misses 7 games. Comes back. Looks terrible. then suffers an upper body injury with a blocked shot.
Right.
I talked to him. He said he was hoping that the time off from that would help heal his ankle. He battled and battled and battled, and then he hasn't played since January 22nd against the Blues, and he's been out of the lineup. Mm. And again, I think everyone wants to gang up on him so bad.
Well, they already have.
Well, they have. It's clear.
Right.
That he signs the 7-year deal worth $24.5
million.
Mm. He's got to be better. And I'm not excusing the mistakes he made on the ice. Like,
sure.
There were a lot of mental mistakes, the penalties he took, things like that.
Right, right.
That being said, and this is today talking to Barzal, and we're going to play a clip here in just a second, but this is an eye-opener for me because you could watch Mayfield and go, listen, he's not 100%. Like, clearly. He's making a lot of mistakes mentally and physically, but he's not right. And for a guy who's as big as that, where he's killing penalties, blocking shots, to not be able to put 100% weight on that ankle every game is killer. But here's what Matthew Barzal had to say, and we'll talk about it after the fact, because there's one word he said that I mean, want to touch on.
He's always been like that for us. You know, he's heart and soul guy, and yeah, I mean, sucked, you know, watching him kind of go through that kind of pain and every night. So I'm happy that for his health that he's getting the surgery now, and or whatever he's getting. I honestly have no idea what he's going.
Yeah, we just got told he's going to get surgery.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, so, you know, hopefully, you know, I know he'll come back stronger, and yeah.
He said the pain he is going through every night.
Mm-hmm.
And that's when I heard Barzal say that again. Watching you go, okay, he's probably in some discomfort.
Mm-hmm.
Barzal just told us he was in pain every night, and with Pulak down, with Pelech down, with Aho down. Mayfield is just not a guy that wants to come out of the lineup ever.
Sure.
Mayfield really tried to do everything he could just to play and be available. Mm-hmm. They didn't have the options to just... You had to have him play, and I think that probably hurt him.
Mm-hmm.
And you could 100% argue, well, the surgery should have happened earlier. They shouldn't have had him play through it because it was hurting the team. But to knock Mayfield for it all again. Exactly. And just, again, the amount of pain he was in clearly every night, not saying that every mistake he made was because of the injury, but you got, I think, lay off him a little bit because it's clear as day that this guy was in a lot of pain and still tried to do everything
he could. This is going to sound strange, but I'll explain it. It's almost good to hear that he was hurt. all year. Mm-hmm. Because that means that that just wasn't Scott Mayfield at 100% health, and that we'd have to be a little more concerned about how the rest of this contract that everybody's been groaning about, right?
And it's possible.
Now, that doesn't mean he's going to – look, that doesn't mean if and when he comes back next season he's 100% healthy that all of a sudden everything's going to change. I'm not here to say that either, but at least it gives a little bit of hope that – you know, maybe this was a guy who was playing when he maybe shouldn't have, because again, you had Bortuzzo down.
Yep.
And not only the big guns, but you had Bortuzzo down too. He would have been an option as well. So, you know, maybe this is a guy who kind of grinned and bared it and he played out of necessity. He did his best. And look, if, you know, lower body injury, the ankle, right? Yeah. I mean, that's an injury that's obviously going to slow you down. So maybe it did cause him to take one extra penalty here, make one bad play there. Obviously, a little slower footage simply because his ankle was torn up, right? So again, like, I'm not here to say Scott Mayfield is going to be picture perfect when he comes back healthy and he's going to be 10 times better than he was this year. But at least you know that there was something dragging him down. There was something that was causing him to have a rougher go out there where, again, maybe over the course of the rest of this contract, or at least the next 2 to 3 years, that it may not be as bad as everybody seemed to see that it was this season.
And I think, again, you don't want to use injuries and excuses, right, but it wouldn't shock me if Ilya Sorokin's dealing with something. A lower, mild thing.
You never know.
Adam Pellick, again, who had a back-to-back head injuries in, what, a 14-month span?
Right.
Clearly that's had an impact, whether it's minor or major. I mean, we don't know what all these guys are going through. The only player that really hasn't been hurt all year is Cal Clutterbuck, who hasn't missed a game. How crazy is that?
And he's usually good for missing 20 to 30
and
games
just freak
every
injuries.
Year.
Right. Yeah, and so you never know what players are going to. Right. Like Andrew said, everyone's banged up at this time of year. But again, it wouldn't shock me come the end of the year where we hear X, Y, and Z are dealing with something. And we go, oh, you know what? Doesn't excuse them, but that makes a little, like, again, I think if people heard that Sorokin was dealing with a mild strain of something.
Sure.
After the year, you go, well, there it is. Well, which maybe you won't even know.
You always find out at the end of the, usually you find out at the end of the year, this guy was dealing with this, this guy was dealing with that. Maybe that comes to light. Maybe it doesn't. We'll see. But I'd say, why don't we go into what's on tap? But before we do, I want to tell you all about Main Street Board Game Cafe in Huntington Village on Long Island's North Shore. Games for sale and for open play. Food and drink, beer and wine, fun and friends. Bring the magic of phones down, eyes up, tabletop board games to your family. Our staff will help you find the right game, from old favorites to the hottest new releases. We have everything from strategic to easy party games. Get off your screens for a night your family will remember. Looking for meetups to join? Our Magic the Gathering, Dungeons and Dragons, Lorcana, and organized play communities are welcoming for all. We also do parties and corporate events. Located at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village. Go to mainstboardgamecafe.com for more information. Main Street Board Game Cafe. Find your crowd. Unplug your game. So why don't we take one more break and then go into what's on tap.
Attention all artists, storytellers, and creators of all kinds. It's time to make your content stand out above the rest. And Floored Media is the place to make your visions become a reality. Maybe you want to elevate your podcast and add some video, or turn that novel you wrote into an audiobook. Or maybe you just need the right space to produce your daily vlog. Whether you're a seasoned veteran or just starting out, and no matter the project, Floored Media has the professional facilities, exceptional staff, and intimate atmosphere to breathe life into your creative passions at every step of the process. If it's engineering, production, live streaming, or post-production, you name it, Floored Media does it all. Conveniently located in the heart of Rockville Center and only a 30-minute ride from New York City on the Long Island Railroad, your creative incubator awaits. Go to floorednmedia.com for more information, and email contact@floorednmedia.com for packages, rates, and availability. Hone in on your unique voice and start your project with Floored Media.
And now, it's time for What's on Tap, a look ahead at the Islanders' upcoming schedule.
Welcome back to the program, ladies and gentlemen. You're watching Hockey Night New York at twitch.tv/HockeyNightNY and all your favorite streaming providers. And now it's time for What's on Tap. Stefan, it was a busy week last week, but they got a couple of days off to start this week and a couple of games down in sunny Florida. Thursday, 7 p.m. against the mighty Florida Panthers. That is going to be a tough one. And then, of course, Saturday, they go into Tampa for another 7 p.m. tilt against the Tampa Bay Lightning, who has been surging of late, no longer in the crosshairs of the New York Islanders for a playoff spot. That has come and gone. Stefan, what do you say about this weekend in Florida?
I could say this is the season right here. Every game's a must win, but now the fact that they're points out, obviously, and other teams have game in hands, things like that. I know the Capitals are playing the Red Wings tonight. Jake, I don't know if we have a score update on that. I don't know who. I mean, I think you want the Red Wings to win. Just mathematically, I'm not good at math, though. But, yeah, Florida Panthers are a juggernaut. absolute juggernaut of a team. Went healthy. I know Barco was dealing with stuff. I know Tkachuk was dealing with stuff. Reinhardt's got 50 goals, right? This team is a Stanley Cup contender to the definition. Bobrovsky's been fantastic. We'll see who the Islanders do face. That being said, the Islanders did beat the Panthers last time they were in Florida, December 2nd, I believe. They did that without Matthew Barzal. They did do it with Julien Gaudier, who sniped in that game.
Oh,
so,
that's right.
Well, yeah, I don't think memory. Again, he could, yeah, maybe. The dumb things. I remember the things that don't matter. Maybe we see, oh yeah, we haven't talked about that too. It's like, they could call Gaudier back up. They have the cap space.
They can do anything.
They could do anything they want, except play matinees and back-to-backs. But yeah, so that's going to be a tough game, but you're at the point of the season now where you're going to have to beat, if you're not going to beat teams behind you, you got to beat teams ahead of you, and maybe that's a game where the Panthers take the Islanders lightly. Again, it's all about the start. If you let the Panthers get to their game on home ice, you're done. You're absolutely done.
Well, it's funny. You talk about the starts and some of these losses that the Islanders have had of late, and I would even say against the Devils where, you know, the first 5-10 minutes.
Good first.
They actually look pretty good.
Yeah.
And, you know, the problem is against the Devils, which we didn't really touch on, was they had the power play opportunities, and they came out, they had chances, they had some close calls, and they just didn't drop. And it's happened in a lot of games recently where they would start out that way, and then they blow those chances, the other team comes back, they score a couple goals, it dominoes, and then the game just gets out of hand.
Yeah, like you said, a couple of chances off the bat in pretty much every game they've had. They don't score on that. First, one or two shots goes the other way, goes in, and then again, the wind's out of the sails. It's on, and you don't know why it happens for a team that's, again, you would understand if it was a rookie team, learning how to win and what it takes to be an NHL team.
Yeah,
this team has won, they've played in big games, won big games, makes no sense. And then on Saturday, they play the Tampa Bay Lightning, which, like you just said, is hot now.
Right.
They always end up turning it up later on, like the Penguins, when the Penguins were good, they would always be around, and then come March, just light it up, pun intended, I guess. But yeah, Tampa's in a spot, though, even though they're head in the wild card race at the top seed, they're in a new spot for them. Like, being a wild card team is not them. So again, but they're playing for a lot, too. So I think, you know, John Cooper is going to have his team ready to go. They're hosting there at home, another place where they play well. Again, the Islanders have to figure out a way. It's, I guess at this point, you want wins, too, but you really just need points.
They're at the point of the season where, they're at the stretch of the season where any collection of losses now, they're toast, right? Any wins just prolongs the season. We don't even know if that means they're going anywhere, if they're going to the playoffs. But they drop both of these games, toast. One, maybe they're on life support if other teams ahead of them have some losses between now and the weekend. But, I mean, they have to take at least 3 points, I would say, just to have a prayer going forward, and then maybe you get past these two tough games, and then maybe they can get some more wins out of the rest of the season. But I mean, that's really where we're at. We're basically waiting for the bottom to fall out, where if they get a couple of losses in a row now, it's just essentially over. So two huge games, and we've talked about these huge games coming up, like the Red Wings game and the Devils game, and them falling flat in their faces, and now we just wait to see which New York Islanders team shows up.
Yeah, and again, we've talked about it a lot. Like, they did this themselves. They had the 6-game winning streak. They were in a playoff spot. They had they were in control of their destiny, and they said, no, here you go.
Stefan, I sat here on this show and said, well, 2 weeks ago, I said, the Islanders are a shoo-in for the playoffs. And now I look like an absolute clown. And I own it, because they completely fooled me with that losing streak. They won the 6 in a row. You had other teams in the Metro just rolling out the red carpet, the Caps, the Pens, the Devils, the Flyers just saying, here you go, take it. And credit to the Flyers for staying where they are, for sure, and John Tortorella. But you had these teams dealing guys away, saying, we don't want it. You guys go ahead.
The Capitals need to be studied on how this even happened. Minus 31 a couple days ago, goal differential. They trade Kuznetsov, no Backstrom. Kemper's not great. Carberry deserves some Jack Adams.
Some love. Yeah, sure. But again, this team had me fooled in the sense that I thought they finally got Patrick Waugh's system. They were getting with the program. They were hitting their stride at the right time. They were finally coming out with urgency. And they were like, okay, they're in playoff mode now. It's happening. And just, it goes completely the other way. And even if they had to split those games, they'd be okay right now. They'd be still fighting, but they'd be in a much better spot. So, I mean, it just is a testament to just how wild this season has been from front to back. When you talk about all the strange coincidences, all the strange streaks, the special teams flip-flopping, the power play, the PK, going one good, one bad. It's just been such a strange year. And, you know, here we are, and we have no idea what's going to happen next.
And, you know, there's 11 games left. They could win 6 in a row, and they could lose 5.
Right, and they probably will.
And again, it's going to be crazy if they miss. I mean, you could point to so many things if they miss by a point or two? Because, again, they're not going to have tiebreakers on anybody.
So oh, you anybody there behind 4 points, 5 points, add another point.
But it's just like you could arguably look at one game in particular if they miss by a point.
What do you got here?
The Sharks?
The Sharks game?
You look at all the blown leads.
That's one of many.
For sure, but that's the one that could be like come to everyone's head and go, the Islanders have missed the 2024 Stanley Cup playoffs because they lost to the San Jose Sharks. It's absurd. It's crazy. But again, we've seen it time and time again. Why are they safe? Why'd they take till 82 last year? The Arizona Coyotes.
I almost feel like the script on this season was written for something exactly like that to happen, where they'll go on some kind of run, but for these last 11 games, and they'll tie somebody in points, but they'll be behind in the tiebreaker, whatever it is, and we'll say, well, you know, that's how the season was going.
It reminds me of Tavares. I think he's going for. He's going for the most, not most goals, I think points, whatever it was. He's trying to hit that milestone and
Jamie Benn
with an empty net goal like 3 hours after the Islanders played their final. Yep. That's what it reminds me of. Right. Like, they'll tie a team or they'll go ahead of a team that still has to play that night and then like 2-1 in overtime. They're like, fuck.
Yeah, we'll see. Or they'll just put us out of our misery early and just go on a 7-game losing streak and just end it all. Anything can happen in this season. Anything can happen.
Do you have a score update? All right, that Detroit Capitals game is going to overtime. We already know that's going to happen. Both teams are going to get points, and that's what's going
to
happen.
Yeah. No question about it. All right, so what do you say we go into the Hero of the Week?
Sure.
Excellent. Ladies and gentlemen, when you hear this song, that means it's time for the Hero of the Week, brought to you by the Blue Line Deli and Bagels Half Price Hero, which this week is the Mr. Ledecky, featuring turkey, ham, provolone, lettuce, tomato, and mustard on fresh rye bread. A stop on into Blue Line Deli and Bagels, Huntington location. Mention Hockin' at New York and get half off the Mr. Ledecky. So, Stefan, let's go to you first. Who's your Hero of the Week?
Here is Matthew Barzal, and the reason why is he tied his career high in goals against the Winnipeg Jets, 22. Okay. Spoke to him after the game about it. He goes, listen, you know, I could be a playmaker all I want, but if I'm going to be one of those top players in the league, I have to score goals. We know he's shattered his career high in shots, but not only was it that goal, the Islanders were already up 3-1 at the time. So that made it 4-1, whatever it was. But the will and desire to score that one, that was him 3 or 4 chances. That will that we've missing as a team collectively, they were up in that game, and he's fighting. You see the emotions afterwards. To me, that's why he's the hero, because he gets the big goal, but it wasn't a huge goal for them in that game. It was just the work ethic that Waugh's been preaching, getting to the net, fighting and battling and putting that will. He showed that on a goal that, at that point of the game, that game was kind of, they were running away with it, and he showed it there, and I thought that was important to see from a guy that, you know, he's had a great, fantastic year, and even in a big game, he wasn't stopping. He was so passionate setting up Fashing, so passionate setting up Lee, and then that goal for him to tie a career high, which he hasn't hit since his rookie year, that sealed it for me.
That's what you need to see out of your top players, but isn't it a little odd now that Matt Barzal's previous big year was in a failed year as far as making the playoffs. Now we might be on the cusp of that again, where he's up against the top points that he's produced as an Islander, but it might again be at the expense of missing out on the playoffs.
Yeah, I think, though, I guess the one thing you could look at which different is that year was Tavares' last year, which means Barzal was going up against the second and third pair of Ds.
True.
This year has been more against the top pair of guys.
I like that. All right, so my Hero of the Week is Mr. Cal Clutterbuck. The opening 2 goals against the Winnipeg Jets, 2 very nice goals. The first one was a scrappy one. Well, the first one, he collects his own rebound, stuffs it in the net. The second one, yes, very sneaky sniper on this team. He's got a great shot. He just, I guess just because of the role he plays, he doesn't get too much opportunity to use it. But when he gets some space and he puts the puck on the net, he usually makes it look pretty.
He probably has the second best release on the team behind Brock Nelson.
I think you might be right.
He just snipes. Again, this is Cal healthy. When he's able to do all the physical stuff and kill the penalties and lay major hits, which I forgot what game it was where he launched somebody at center ice. He got called for interference when it wasn't. I mean, he crushed him. But he's got a sneaky shot, which I think it kind of helps when you add more speed to that line. It allows him to play more in the offensive zone. But yeah, Cal Clutterbuck, I imagine he got a hat. I don't think he has never had a hat trick before in his career. So that would have been interesting.
Would have been nice. And what could have potentially been his final year as a New York Islander.
Yeah.
We'll see. So that's the Heroes of the Week. Why don't we go to the Snake Den?
Welcome to the Snake Den with Jake the Snake
Redonis. That's right, folks. It is time for the Snake Den. Jake the Snake Redonis, how are we doing over there, pal?
I'm doing good. I'm taking it all in, you know?
Taking it all in. Yeah. All right. Well, I know you got a take. Yes. So why don't you give us Jake's take?
Well, first off, I want to tell you, you're not alone. I thought the Islanders were a shoo-in 2 weeks ago.
Swindled as well.
Yes, we spoke about it.
We did.
They really got us. We got hoodwinked.
We did.
For sure.
We did.
For sure. But yeah, no, it's crazy to me that one game they literally look like they can make some noise in the playoffs.
Sure.
Maybe Stanley Cup contenders, and the next game they look like one of the worst teams in the league.
He said the S word?
It is very... He did.
I'm sorry.
Bold words, but yes, very confounding.
It's true. I mean, they went up against Connor Hellebuyck, one of the best goalies in the National Hockey League, and
put up
5 goals on him. He wound up getting pulled, and you don't see a guy like that get pulled. But it's just too little too late.
You're done.
Opinion.
You're finished. You're throwing in the white flag.
I think so. I mean,
wow.
I think the name of the episode is actually perfect. They're reliably unreliable.
They're consistently inconsistent.
There's so many ways
I will
you
never
can put
figure
that.
Out if that yeah. means you're consistent or inconsistent, but yeah.
You just don't know what to expect with them.
So Jake the Snake Radonis here in the Snake Den is going on record, waving the white flag, throwing in the towel, whatever other, you know, verbiage you want to use.
You are not
there.
Invited to the Stanley Cup parade.
I'm sorry.
Yeah, what do we do if they get in? I mean,
Listen, if they find a way to get in, we've talked about this. The last couple of times they made the playoffs, they went in on cold streaks. You had
true.
I don't remember the last time the Islanders went into the playoffs where they were feeling good about themselves. That's dangerous. A team that just sneaks in playing. If they're going to make it in, you'd have to think they're playing their best hockey maybe over a 2-game span. At the last, like, they're playing well enough to get in that I wouldn't want to face this team. You have no idea what to expect. The other team, you can't game plan. You have no idea if they're going to come out strong in the first period or sit back. Or the power play is going to be good, or the penalty is going to be good, or Sorokin's going to be good. It's a hard team to read.
No, they have proven this year that you do not know what's going to happen.
That's
it doesn't
scary.
Matter the opponent. It doesn't matter the day of the week. Doesn't matter. Well, if it's early in the day, you know they're probably losing.
Yeah.
Or if it's a second of back-to-backs. But
which you shouldn't get in the playoffs. Also, in the playoffs, to be fair, their overtime record, which obviously has been a negative thing this year with how many overtime...
I don't equate regular season overtime to playoff overtime.
No, what I'm saying is the Islanders actually have advantage because they go to 5-on-5.
Yeah.
Which they played better under Wah.
Well,
not good enough.
Hopefully by the graces of the hockey gods, we have a reason to see how they do in 5-on-5 overtime. But we have a lot of hills to climb before we get there. We'll see. 11 games to go. But Jake, great job with the take.
Thank you.
Great stuff. And so before we go into questions brewing, I'm going to tell you all about Isles Fix. Islanders country, get your daily fix of Isles news, highlights, and analysis by subscribing to Isles Fix, the only Monday through Friday Islanders newsletter sent directly to your inbox. Sign up for free or become a paid subscriber for added benefits at islesfix.substack.com. And with that, questions brewing.
Wait, you're not going to ask me how I'm doing?
I was going to wait for the intro, and then I was going to ask you, but I guess I can ask you now since you're so impatient.
Ask me how I'm doing, then we go into
Jay,
the intro.
How
because
you guys
I'm
doing?
I'm thinking of playing myself the Jake the Snake intro, because I never wanted that music to end, to be honest with you.
It's a catchy tune, a little 80s vibe.
Yeah. But Jay and I are doing great.
Yeah, I don't know. Jay doesn't seem to agree. He's back to grumpy Jay. You know, he was actually in great spirits the day you weren't here. He was smiling. He was laughing. He was having
skipping.
A good time.
I saw him skip.
That's weird. I'm the only one that's allowed to drink his teas. You know? Yeah, I am. I'm playing my song now.
It's time for Questions Brewing. So go ahead, ask us a question.
That's right. It's time to ask Stefan Rosner and I some questions about the New York Islanders. So hope the chat has been lively. Ed, what do you have for us today?
We're starting off with Mr. Joey Pickles.
Hey, 30. Joey.
He asks, do we see Maggio when the Isles return from Florida?
Stefan.
I don't know. I don't know what prospect will come up first. To me, again, if you're talking about inserting a spark into the lineup to generate things, I think Maggio would take less time to get adjusted to the NHL game.
Yeah, who's first on the list?
It depends what they're going for. If they're just calling up prospects to get a look, I think it'll be Ishikov just because you could allow for him to get some time. You're not trying to win the games.
I'm seeing a lot of calls for Ishikov, and it's every time I see the calls, it's based on a great shootout attempt. Like that's not the reason to call anybody up. You don't call a guy up because he's good at the shootout or because he can score between his legs. Sorry, go ahead.
Ishikov's issue is going to be his size, and it sucks. As someone who is tiny, who you look down upon playing hockey in all sports, like it sucks, but the reality of the situation is it's a big boy league. You get hit, and if you don't get up, you know, the best ability is availability.
Why do you think this kid is so made of glass? Whenever we talk about Ishikov, you think he's going to get plowed through the boards.
I've seen him get hit and then not get up.
And I'm asking you this legitimately. You think he's more prone to injury than other smaller guys?
I think with the time and space you have at the AHL level, he has more time to evade hits, where at the NHL level, there's not as much time, and one hit could be it for a guy like that. I mean, I saw him get hurt in the blue and orange scrimmage last year. It was a soft hit in the corner, and he struggled to get up. He left the game.
All right.
I don't want to knock the kid. I just
wanted to hear the basis for why you seem to always go this route with him, and now I understand.
He's not great at playing without the puck and going into corner. I just don't think he'll be able to hold up and win battles. Maybe not get hurt, just not be effective. Again, he's effective when he has the puck on his stick. But everyone talks about his speed. He doesn't have world-class speed. He has world-class hands, which makes it seem like he's fast because he could open up and create lanes for himself. But it's more of breaking ankles and scoring these goals where I feel like if he was in Europe, dominating. He'd be dominating. I just think at the NHL level, with how big these guys are, like a Gallagher hit to Ishikov compared to Pellett, like that's it. To me, that's it.
All right, back to Maggio. We're doing Joey Pickles a disservice here.
Yeah, sorry, Joey Pickles. I just think Maggio...
That's a Stefan tangent.
Maggio reminds me of McLean.
Okay.
Someone who has the IQ, defensive prowess first, has the offensive flair that could seamlessly go into a lineup and just fill in. It wouldn't be a couple of games trying to adjust. Okay. Like, he knows how to get the puck deep. He knows where to be, where McLean comes up and he doesn't stand out, which is a good thing. So that's why I think if the Islanders are still trying to win games, Maggio is a better option, but if they're eliminated and they're just trying to get prospects, just bring Ishikov up. He's a back-to-back all-star in the AHL. See if he could handle it. And if he can, great, and maybe he's an option next year. If you see that he can't or that he won't fit what Wah wants, maybe at least him getting two or three games increases his value where a team like the Sharks or the Ducks or somebody wants him because, again, he could go back to the KHL where there's been rumors about that. The reason that rumors are there is because he did his younger playing junior training with CSKA Moscow and whatever the rules are there, that if he goes to the KHL, they have his rights. So that rumor started because that clearly is, if he's going to the KHL, he has to go there. I just think Maggio is more NHL ready.
Gotcha. And speaking of kids real quick, is there anything to be said about this signing spree that the Islanders have gone on lately?
Yeah. Alex Jeffries was a guy they could have signed last year. He decided to go back for his senior year at Merrimack. The guy that covers Merrimack, Mike McMahon, as I think is how you pronounce it, he said that, I don't know how many prospects come out of McMahon, how many prospects come out of Merrimack, but he tweeted out and said that he is the most NHL-ready player he's ever seen come out of that program.
Okay.
He's torn it up. I think he was a Hobey Baker finalist or a couple years or MVP.
I think that's right, yeah.
This kid seems like the real deal. First game in Bridgeport, he got an assist.
Okay.
The Islanders could definitely use someone to just become a top six guy.
Yeah.
That being said, he has to have the opportunity to become that.
Sure.
I think what's killed a guy like Ishikov, not having a spot to play, Durando not getting a chance to play, even Wahlstrom not really getting the chance to be a top six guy, Dufour not getting, like, those are kind of guys where there's no really opportunity in the organization because of all the veterans in the contract. So I wouldn't have been shocked if Jeffries decided not to sign and sign with whoever he wants, because that way you could look at a team and say, well, here's a clear path to the NHL where I think with this team, given the contracts, like, you could sign here, but we have no idea if you're ever going to get a shot.
No, I haven't looked at the Bridgeport results lately, but from what I can remember earlier in the year when I kind of dabbled in to see what was going on, like, they've been having a rough season, right? They're not performing very well. I know they had a lot of losses early in the year. Does that do these guys a disservice, too, when they don't have a competitive team around them to just perform better? I mean, and maybe that's why they went out and, you know, went on the signing spree, because they're trying to build the program back up. Because I feel like in order for your youth to be successful at the lower levels, they need to have talent around them to kind of help build them up, right?
Yeah, and we saw it last year, too. It was like they were on a roll last year, and then everyone in the Islanders got hurt, and all those players got called up, and that team sank. And then this year, you know, I think it was poor asset management from Bridgeport, because you lose a guy like Chris Terry, who we had on our show, and Andy Andreev, who were their top two scorers, and you don't bring scorers in. So now you're putting a lot more pressure on these young guys to fill holes of veterans who clearly dominate the AHL landscape. Puts them on April. Skarik has struggled mightily in goal. He went from a guy that maybe could be a backup in the future to probably not. You had Ken Albee playing better than him. You had Henrik Taikkanen, 6'7", come up, or 6'8", come up and dominate. Now, he got sent back to the ECHL because they have a chance at a playoff run. He's going to start for them there. So, yeah, I think it's tough when you have young guys where you're not winning games. And especially when the NHL team, like, you know what, you want to model yourself after. But also, I think when the NHL team's struggling, that should push the Bridgeport guys more. Hey, they might call me up and get a chance,
sure,
but I think it's hard to produce points when collectively the team's struggling.
Well, Joey Pickles, you inspired a lot of conversation.
Yeah, I was going to say, well, there
two.
You have it.
Question
Joey
two.
Pickles. Will we see Maggio? No one knows, apparently. Next up from Matthew DiBernardo. Questions brewing. If we do draft, who do you want? Iginla slated for 13 pick would be nice, or Cole Iserman slated for 8?
I'll be honest. I have not looked at the draft yet. One, because the Islanders will probably trade it first. Again, I have no issues with him trading it first if you're getting a player that's going to help you. In terms of other players, like, if he's asking about what players can be traded, you look at the cap. That's all you got to look at, is right now they're finding ways to fit McLean on the roster, whether he's playing center or he's playing wing. We've talked about it a lot. Pajot's been great for this team. They don't go to back-to-back semifinals without him. When you have a guy making $800,000 and a guy making $5 million, I'm not good at math. I could do that math, right? It just financially makes more sense probably to move on from a guy like Pageau, but I don't think you're going to see any block. Like, I don't think Brock Nelson's getting traded. We've talked about this a lot.
I don't think
you're seeing Kyle Palmieri getting traded. People were rumoring, well, why don't you trade Pellick or Pulak, one of those guys, because we're talking about it. Maybe they're on the decline. Mm-hmm. I don't see that happening. And yeah, I don't know who they'd pick at this point. I think they're around 13 to 16. TJ Ginla's been unreal this year. We're seeing Shane Doan's son make his NHL debut tonight. For the Coyotes, I'm not guaranteeing that a name of a former player is that son's going to be an elite player like their parents we saw.
Sure.
We've seen Nystrom's kid.
Right.
No, we don't know. So I think the draft's something we'll talk about in a little bit later on as we get prepared for that, because right now the Islanders are focused, and we're focused on right now.
The Wheel 89 asks, which player has won the most Heroes of the Week from each of you this year? And does it line up with your picks for the team of MVP this season? This might be the better end of season discussion.
I love the question. I think we just found a job for Jake the Snake Radonis.
I think
Jake can compile those numbers for us, and we can probably get back to you because I don't have a running tally. But I know pretty much
it's probably not Scott Mayfield, if I had to guess.
I know I got it once, so I don't think it's me. I got it when we were in
California. That's right. You're in the running. Yeah. You did get it once. And it definitely wasn't because we needed a place to put you on the screen.
Of course not.
Clutterbuck, I think, was first this week. And I don't know. I mean, Horvat's definitely up there.
Barzal's
got to be up there.
It's definitely not Sorokin.
And, I mean, last year he probably was number one.
Yeah, he definitely was.
But, I love the question. I love that you got the gears turning on that so you give us an opportunity by the time the end of the season comes. So we'll see. Jake, you're working a little overtime for us, buddy. All right, what do you got?
He's like great success.
Woohoo!
Mr. Tom Boyle asks, if WOW would have become the GM? That's an if.
I know. Mm-hmm. I know, but I got
it. It's iffy.
I got it.
You can abstain.
Would you see him hiring Sullivan if he's fired by Pittsburgh?
Now I have to make a statement. I said on this show probably 3 weeks ago, someone asked the question, could you see Waugh become the GM one day? And I said, yeah, I could see him becoming the GM one day and Ben Waugh coming over as a head coach one day. Somebody flipped the switch on me, wrote an article that I said that Lou was out of a job to the point where it became a thing that I had to talk to Lou about. And it was hysterical. It was funny. That being said, I don't want to answer this question. Sean, you're up.
Yeah, listen, T-Boy, we love you, bro. We love you, pal. We love the energy. But it's such a hypothetical of a hypothetical that, I mean, sure, Mike Sullivan should be in the running if all those dominoes fell into place. I mean, he's a guy who I think in off seasons past, that when we weren't sure, like it might have even been before Lane Lambert had the torch pass or whatever it was. Yeah, I think it was in the interim between Barry Trotz being let go and before they announced Lane Lambert, I had said, if the Penguins fire Sullivan, you got to go at a guy like him. So sure, Tom, in that branch timeline in the TVA, I think that would be a smart move for Patrick Waugh if also in that branch timeline he was the general manager. But I don't think that's what we're going to see this summer. I think signs are more and more pointing to Patrick Waugh being the coach next season and probably Lou Lamoriello still being the general manager.
Well said, Sean.
Yeah. We have a lot of naysayers.
I mean, listen.
I give you a lot of reasons why Lou will be the GM.
It's assumed right now that he's gone.
Look, I've said it earlier in the season. I said if they don't make the playoffs, I said it increases the chances of Lou Lamoriello not being the general manager. I think it is perfectly reasonable to look at that and say, hey, it's an unsuccessful season. He's had a crack at it now for, 5 years, whatever it's been. Obviously, he's gotten them very close. It didn't work out. And I think it's fair to put that into question if they don't make the playoffs. Now, I just don't think, based on what's transpired, what the conversations have been like, even just the press conferences and all that, my inkling is that Lou is still going to be the general manager this summer, probably to the chagrin of a good amount of you out there in the chat. But I think that it's still going to be his job, and I think Patrick Waugh is already talking about next training camp, right? Scott Mayfield coming back, right? So I think, you know, we're kind of getting signs here and there that's probably the way this is going to go. And I know maybe a lot of you don't like to hear about it, but maybe Lou deserves a chance to retool the roster. And I probably a lot of eyes rolling right now as I say that. But And hindsight is 20/20 in this situation, right? Because I've seen a lot of comments, even on Twitter, responding to me and stuff like that about, you know, this team has been toast for the last 3 years. Like, the guy doubled down on a back-to-back conference run. Like, nobody, you cannot look back and say this guy's a fool for doing that. You reward those players going to the Final Four 2 years in a row. That's just how it's going to be. So the 3 years ago, there's no chance that happened. Even the next year after that, okay, you know, maybe you start to get you start to wonder a little bit where this team is going. But to sit there and tell me that Lou should have had the foresight to know that the last 2 years were going to go the way that they go, okay, well, congratulations. You obviously have a crystal ball or whatever the case may be. So look, I understand that maybe, you know, a lot of you guys are getting a little impatient with Lou and getting a little restless with him. I'm curious to see what he does, where it looks very clear now that, yes, this team as a whole is past its expiration. Again, they could surprise us in 11 games, but it looks that way. So I think Lou, if it keeps going this way, he's probably going to have a similar opinion, and he's maybe going to do what we're talking about here in the sense that, okay, I have some decisions to make on X, Y, and Z. This guy might have to go. This guy might have to be replaced, and I might have to make an effort to bring in some other pieces. Now, I have no idea what Lou Lamoriello is thinking, but that's just where I think it's going
to
go.
One more before you get to the question is, for all the people that want Lou out, hypothetical here. I know hypotheticals can get you in trouble. If Lou is out and they bring in a new general manager, no one can tell me right now that new GM comes in and keeps Patrick Roy. So for all the people that want Lou to stay here and they love Patrick Roy, if a GM comes in who doesn't like Patrick Roy or thinks that the roster they have now and seeing what they did this half of the year that says most of these guys can't play the way Roy wants to play and says it's easier for me to get the coach that I think could play with this group, then don't be surprised if Lou is out and Wah is also out. Again, I think Wah will be back and a GM could come in and say, listen, we like what Wah's done. We're going to help fix, you know, the roster for him. But again, if you're really begging for Lou to be gone, you also have to think about the possibility, whether it's a small percent or not, that a new GM comes in. Usually GMs come in and they bring their own coach. I'm just saying that.
Moving on to DTMR. Another trivia question about the show. Have the Islanders lost every game when Hockey Night in New York has a pregame show?
Probably. I mean, to be honest, we haven't had a lot this year.
You had the Ranger game. That was one.
Mm-hmm.
You had the game against the Caps. I believe you had a watch party because I called in.
Okay.
You were doing a show.
Okay.
They lost that game.
When the hell was that?
I don't know. I think it was in Florida you called one. I don't know. You had a couple.
We had more last season.
Maybe I'm getting confused the last
season. Yeah, we had more last season.
I think they won the game we had with Donnie here, right?
Maybe.
No, that was against the Senators. No, they lost that game. That was against Montreal. They lost.
Oh, that was.
Yeah,
so I think we may be 0-for. And again, it hasn't been a lot, but
probably all day games.
Well, the Blue Line one was, I think, a day game. The one we did at Blue Line, I think they played later that day. But either way, yeah, probably. So, you know what? I don't mind taking some blame. That's fine. Put it on New York. I'm okay with it.
On the tab.
Did they?
They won the Blue Line one?
That was Patrick Roy's first game.
Ah, the Dallas game.
Ah, well, there
Jake
you go.
Jake the Snake. Yeah, there you go, buddy.
It, keep you around for
really earn your keep around here.
And get to work on the heroes.
All right. So next from NZEB09. This team needs a major change. Who stays and who goes?
I feel like we should wait until the season's over. Because you know what's going to happen, right? We're going to say so-and-so should stay or so-and-so should go. And then the next 11 games are going to do the exact opposite of whatever that is. I want to see the complete book closed on this season before I start opining on who should stay and who should go. But I think you can at least see the needle moving in certain directions. You already mentioned a name like J.G. Pageau. Is it a guy I think you got to kick the hell out of here? No, but even before this season, there was talks of him maybe being included in a deal. And when you just look at the bang for the buck, how much money he's making, and if they want to bring in some new young talent, you got to clear the salary out somewhere. I think logic just tells you that maybe he's a guy that's towards the top of the list, and then we can formulate a more complete list by the time the season is over.
We're going to do another one from Joey Pickles. I like this one. What do you make of the Isles switching the season ticket holder Q&A to Just Kids Tonight? We were talking about this before. Shouldn't they be accountable to their season ticket holders with tough questions?
No, I disagree.
I think what they're doing is beyond genius because, again, there could be guys that are respectful. More often than not, though, when you get a mic and you could ask things, you have to have a sense of trust that an adult's not going to curse, not going to do this things. There's kids around. I think what they did tonight was genius. You can't allow everyone to just speak their mind. It's not going to go well.
Yeah, listen, I can go on. I can go on and on about this. Listen, I understand that fan bases deserve some answers to questions, and especially when they're putting in their time, they're putting in their money and whatnot. Yes, I understand that, but I mean, just think about it. I mean, let's just look at this rationally. You have an open forum with season ticket holders.
Rationally, what are we doing here?
Right, but like, listen, and again, Joey Pickles, you might be a very calm, composed individual, but I don't know if we can say every season ticket holder on Long Island is calm and composed. So one person steps up to the mic, asks a disrespectful question, you know, why the hell is this guy still here, or F this guy, and it might not even be that extreme, but like, you have to remember that these guys are also human beings too. And also, you know, this is an event for the season ticket holders that, yes, it's a nice kind of welcoming into a little bit of a behind the scenes type of thing. But at the same time, like, this is, I mean, look, you had people live tweeting it all day. And now what benefit is it to the New York Islanders? You know, you look at the PR storm that could come back from that, right? If somebody gets behind the microphone and just asks a stupid or disrespectful question, that serves nobody. That doesn't do anybody any good. So, listen, I'll say this. If they had have been a little more successful, maybe they were still in a playoff spot. Maybe they extended that six-game winning streak to a 10-0-2 streak, and they were nice and comfortably in the playoffs, and maybe the expectation was there's going to be less fire coming from the fan base. Maybe they still would have left it open to adults. But in this situation, when they're obviously not, you know, meeting expectations, which sucks for anybody who supports the team. But again, like, really, what good is that going to do if you say, hey, you know, imagine Mayfield being up there. Hey, what the hell, man? Why'd you take three penalties against the Rangers in the Stadium Series game? Or, you know, who does that help? You know, and does that really, you know, give the fan base anything more than they need in that kind of situation? And rant.
Tom just said, Ed, imagine me up there asking a question.
Exactly.
That's exactly who we're talking about. Tom Boyle. Tommy, you're lucky we field some of your questions on the show. There's no way you're getting near the Islanders with those questions. But we love you, buddy.
I think we probably have time for one more, right?
Yeah, one more, and that's it.
So this is, I guess, a fitting end here. Trottier19, my man. Who sings louder, the fat lady or Roy Orbison? Because it's over. No playoffs.
All right, so more of a venting than a question.
Well, who sings louder?
Oh, who sings louder? Roy Orbison's got a pretty soft voice from what I can recall. So I'm going to go with the overweight female. But yeah, listen, it might be. It might be. Might be over. But, you know, again, this team, there's no guarantees with this team. Just when you think they suck, they play well. Just when you think they're great, they shit the bed. So it remains to be seen. 11 games to go. We'll find out. Stay tuned.
Stay tuned. And with that,
let's wrap this thing up. All right, ladies and gentlemen, I want to thank you for tuning in to twitch.tv/hockeynightny and all your favorite streaming providers to watch Hockey Night New York with Stefan Rosner and myself, Sean Cuthbert. I want to send a big thanks to Andrew Gross and Newsday for hanging out with us. Always a great time with that man. And another big thanks to our wonderful sponsors, Blue Line Deli and Bagel, 719 West Jericho Turnpike in Huntington, 217 Carlton Avenue in East Islip. Check them out and check out the menu at BlueLineDeli.com. Also, a big thanks to Main Street Board Game Cafe. Check them out at 307 Main Street in Huntington Village and find out how to unplug your game at MainSTBoardGameCafe.com. And a big thanks to Razor and Kniff, attorneys at law. Nobody likes going to court, but if you have to, call 516-742-7600 for a free consultation. Stefan Rosner, where can we find you on social media?
Follow me on Twitter or X, Elon Musk's baby, whatever you want to call it now.
Okay.
At Stefan_Rosner, STEFEN_ROSNER, the Hockey News, Islanders, Rangers, and NHL.com.
NHL.com. You can find myself at Shawnee Hockey on the Twitter. You can follow the show at Hockey Night NY on, you know, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, Twitch, and YouTube, and
PayPal.
All those wonderful places. And also, folks, if you like what we're doing here, please remember to rate, review, subscribe, tell your friends, acquaintances, coworkers, and anybody you might come across on the street. You know, just be like, hey, Hockey Night New York, they're a really good show. Stefan's a handsome lad. You should check them out. Jake the Snake is in the Snake Den. He does a great job, too. So, yeah, just pass the word along. Talk to everybody about it. It looks like we will not be having a show next week. We have some people traveling on the show, namely these two guys right here. So we will not be around, but we're going to try to fill some space in, maybe with a space on Twitter or something of that nature. So stay tuned. But of course, we will be back the following week. But either way, real big thanks to all you guys for sticking with us every week. We really appreciate the support. Really appreciate you guys hanging out with us. So for Stefan Rosner, for Edzo, for Jay, for Jake the Snake Radonis over in the Snake Den. I've been Sean Cuthbert. We've been Hockey Night in New York, and we will see you next time.